Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Kate Beasley, debut author of Gertie's Leap to Greatness. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 293 of the podcast with Kate Beasley, author of Gertie's Leap to Greatness. Kate's debut novel for middle grade readers has a voice all its own and its calling to be read aloud. So much so, in fact, that I couldn't resist myself in my chat with Kate. Her protagonist is the kind of kid you can see sitting right in front of you, because if you didn't, she'd find a way to make sure you noticed. Gertie is a character I immediately wanted to know better, and as it turns out, Kate had a similar experience when first meeting her main character as well. I hope you and your readers have a chance to meet Gertie soon. Until then, here's episode number 293 of the podcast with Kate Beasley. Welcome to the podcast, Kate Beasley. I am so excited to talk to you about Gertie.
Hi, Matthew. Thank you for having me.
I'm going to just call it out as it is right now. Kate and I started recording and the internet failed and now we're re-recording. So it's more of a treat for me that all of y'all missed the first attempt on this call. But I sure am excited, Kate, that I get to keep talking to you because, as you already heard by now, then, I love Gertie. I love this wonderful character you created here in your debut novel, Gertie's Leap to Greatness. So thank you for coming on to talk to me. And more importantly, thank you for finding Gertie and capturing her in your story.
Well, thank you so much for reading her and for having me on the show. And yeah, I'm so excited to talk about her. I love Gertie too, I have to say.
I don't blame you. You know, you know who else loves Gertie? All the good folks at FSG love Gertie. I was part of the group that got, you know, one of those early arcs that went out, and there was just so much fanfare, so much love, and all the language makes so much sense now having read the book, because all the language pointed to, you've got to meet this girl. You've got to meet this character. You're going to love this character. And sure enough, this girl, Gertie, she's got a story to tell. And Kate, I'm going to just get quiet for a second to let you, if you don't mind, introduce the listeners to your story. Share a little bit about what Gertie's Leap to Greatness is all about.
Okay. Gertie is living in Alabama with her great aunt Ray and her dad, who works on an oil rig. And when Gertie was a baby, her mom didn't want her. She abandoned her. But she lives in the same town still with Gertie, and Gertie actually goes by her house every day. And then one day Gertie sees a sign in her mom's yard and her house is for sale, and Gertie decides that since her mom is moving, she is going to take this opportunity to prove once and for all that she doesn't need a mother, and she's going to be the best fifth grader in the universe. And she hits a snag when a new girl named Mary Sue Spivey moves to town, and Mary Sue is absolutely perfect at everything. So Gertie has to take her down. And that's the start.
That's the best way to put it. Gertie has to take her down.
She does.
She does. This to have a girl that's got such presence from page one, and to, I feel like you play right at the reader, in the hands of the readers, that right away you're like, you really like this girl, right? She's pretty spunky, right? Well, here's the problem. You don't waste any time introducing Mary and really giving us a chance to see what Gertie's all about, because she, boy, that threat moves in, and we really see her, I think we really see her come into her own in this story. And like I said before, being a teacher, being a librarian and a teacher, to see Gertie and to know kids like that in my school, and to know characters like that in children's literature. I see Pippi Longstocking here. I even see like qualities of Dory Phantasmagory, characters like that, that are just, this is a character that is not shy about knowing what they want and telling other people that there's some great injustice and we need to all set this straight so that my life can be better.
Yeah, well, I think I felt that way as a child. I felt a lot of injustice. And I think the children I have met feel that way too. There are injustices when you're a kid because you have no power. You know, all the adults have the power. So I think that's sort of the natural state.
There are no injustices. All adults have the power. I can't wait for kids to read this book. And I'm excited that our recording's going to go up and you're going to have this great book release. But you've spent time leading up to this. I mean, this is your debut. This is, how long has Gertie been with you? If you were to guess, how long has it been since she walked into your subconscious or however she appeared?
Ooh. Well, I started actually writing the book in the summer of 2011. So that was 5 years ago, a little more than 5 years.
How about it?
Yeah. It's gone by fast.
I mean, you've watched her grow in a sense. You've discovered who she is, but I mean, you've, 5 years is time to watch this girl grow.
Well, you really live with the character when you're writing a story. You know, you're thinking about them all the time, and whenever you're reading another book, you're trying to hold your character up to that book, and
yeah,
you know, while you're doing the dishes, you're pondering your character, and so you really live with them. You get to know them and care about them.
So how did Gertie come to you then? Was it that you have worked with kids and you sort of have been wanting to write a story since forever with this voice, or was there an aspect of the story that came to you? Or like, what were you traumatized as a child, being that you were the center of the universe and then somebody else stole it from you?
Oh goodness, this could get personal.
Please.
Well, I think Gertie wasn't inspired by a particular person. I was saying earlier that the first sentence came to me. And when I heard the first sentence, I thought I wanted to know this voice, whoever would think this about a frog, because the first sentence is the bullfrog was only half dead, which was perfect. And I thought, who would say that? And I did draw a bit on my childhood, I'm sure. So Mary Sue Spivey, when she first steps on the scene, steals Gertie's seat. And Gertie thinks, oh, this is a seat stealer. And I mean, I might have had a seat stealer in my past. But I think everybody has.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, Kate, to have the term seat stealer so fresh in your mind, that was like a real joy for me. I think I'm so nervous about people that I probably always just have been like more passive. I see Gertie and I'm just like, man, I want Gertie to be my friend because I'm not Gertie in this story. I'm probably Junior or something.
I understand. I'm much more like Junior than Gertie.
Yeah, but you like Gertie. Like, we like that Gertie's around. Gertie's the best.
I think Gertie Moore does the things I wish I had done as a child.
There you go.
So she's so proactive and goes for what she wants. And yeah, I think I was more timid, but I wish I had been more of a Gertie.
Wait, so I don't want to miss this beat though. So you were like off folding laundry or doing dishes or whatever else you were doing, whatever, maybe you were like painting the house or something fun, and somehow this line, I don't know what you do to make this line pop into your head, but somehow your subconscious gave you the line, "The bullfrog was only half dead," which was perfect. That's what came to you? Kate,
Well,
that's amazing. That's bizarre.
I should say I was sitting by my pond. So there's a pond in my backyard. I live in the woods and it's swampy. It's swampy where I live. And there was actually a bullfrog nearby. And I guess that is what prompted it.
You looked at a bullfrog thinking it's all half dead. Let me just tell you, by the way, weird. This is a weird, bizarre tangent, but it's never happened in my life before. But on my drive to school today, my wife, apparently in that time as she was getting our son ready for school and also then got in the car and left separately, sent me a picture that from our driveway, maybe like 7 feet from where my car had parked, was a dead crow. And I'm like, this is bizarre. But perhaps more bizarre is that a very recent guest called out how it's strange that sometimes life puts experiences in front of you at just the right time that you end up making these connections. So I am now realizing that you have this bullfrog connection, but on the day that I'm here getting ready to talk to Kate Beasley, I had, well, not a half dead, but definitely an all dead crow in
Oh, are
my
you sure though?
in I
Are you sure?
girl, I did not go anywhere near that crow. I didn't want to touch that thing. Its feet were up though. It was maybe it was sunbathing in the overcast day we had today. I don't know.
I think you're supposed to write a book about it.
Well, there you go. It might mean that I'm supposed to write a
Maybe
book
I'll
with
steal it. Maybe I'll steal that dead crow from you.
Gertie Book Two. The crow was all dead,
Was
which was
completely
really
dead.
awesome. Well, to go from that line to the journey of writing the book, I mean, I'm sure as your debut that you've gone through so many different, I mean, you've lived so many different lives in publishing then already, because you've gone from writing it, from all it takes to get the story out of you, to then editing, to having it sold, to, I mean, all these different things that you've done. And now, for me, the most exciting part is now you get to the part where kids have it and you get to be in
I
front of
know.
kids. That to me is the greatest part.
That's the part I've been waiting for.
Yeah, you've been anticipating. Have
Yes,
you w did
yes.
you have you been waiting for that since like before you were a writer? Like,
Yeah, probably.
did you used to have like little dreams about, because this is me. I'm projecting on you. My word, I'm so sorry. But now I'm projecting on you, and I'm thinking like, you know, as a librarian, I've read enough to kids. I've been around kids enough that there just was a point where I was like, wouldn't it be cool if someone was reading my book to them? Like, that'd be kind of cool, right? And I can point back to that there was just a moment when it was just like a, moment. Wouldn't that be cool? Did you have moments of maybe I'll be a writer one day?
I think that would have been terrifying for me to imagine the whole world reading the book. So usually when I'm writing, I imagine like one or two people reading it, like close people who read my work, and I imagine them reading it and laughing at all the funny parts. And of course, I get really mad when they then don't laugh. But yes, I imagine the few people reading. But now that the book is done, I can imagine actual children reading it out in the wild, and that's really exciting because you know they'll take it and they'll read into it different things than I put there, and they'll make it their own. You know, they bring half of the story with them, the reader does. So I think, yeah, that'll be the finishing touch. That'll be the completion of Gertie.
I admire you for the fraction that you just dropped there, that they bring half of the story. I think that says a lot about you, that you give so much ownership to your readers And to really, I think, to acknowledge the way that all of them are going to read and connect with Gertie and in all different ways, because we come from having different experiences and we see ourselves reflected in books differently than other people do.
We do, and we don't know. I mean, as the writer, you know, you have intentions for a story, but you never know how the reader is going to approach the work or what they're going to read into it. And so it's scary but exciting, and they definitely do half the work. You know, they're filling in all the gaps that I've left in the story.
Gaps that, as I've learned from talking to people, sometimes you don't even realize you've left, right?
Exactly.
Things that there are things that kids, I'm going to admit, this is sort of the exciting thing that we get to catch. We'll have to do another podcast one day and catch up with you, because where my brain went is there's going to be things that these kids guess or assume or figure out about Gertie and her life and her experiences that were things that you might not have even imagined, that they just are seeing. Oh yeah, well, of course Gertie's favorite color would be whatever, or of course her favorite food would be whatever, or of course her, like, there's just going to be things like that that the kids are just going to feel so confident in knowing, because they're going to know Gertie in a different way that you knew Gertie.
Exactly. And, you know, I look forward to it, and I'm also a little nervous about it. My sister is a writer. Her name is Cassie Beasley, and she wrote Circus Mirandas, and I've been watching her, and sometimes she does get questions from students that make her pause, because they bring up something in the story she didn't realize was there or she had never considered. And I think that's really exciting, and she does too. So yeah, sometimes you have to pause and think about it, because they are helping create your story, these readers.
Well, I love that your story does have so much space for us to see ourselves in it. And I, more importantly, I love your voice in this story. I was saying to you earlier that one of my favorite things was learning that that you're from the South, that you're from Georgia. My friend Lauren, yep, ended up going to school with you.
Yes.
As soon as I learned that, I was like, oh, because I hear this voice when I read your story, that I feel like there's a flow there to the words. There's a pull. There's a like a river flowing. There's just this nice one line into another that just feels, I can't describe this. I'm no good with words. Do you mind? You're the one that's great with words, as I have evidenced holding in my hand right now. Do you mind if I read an excerpt of Gertie's Leap to Greatness to you, Kate?
Please read to me, Matthew.
I would be honored to read to you. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, let me set up our scene. This is just a couple chapters into Gertie here, maybe around chapter 4. We're pretty early in. And Gertie has very early on met Mary, the seat stealer. And she is all sorts of flustered about this. She comes home. She needs to talk about it. And Aunt Ray's here, and I bring this up because I love the way that you have this adult figure, Aunt Ray, talk to Gertie, or react to Gertie, about Gertie's frustration just wanting to talk about this and find justice in the world. I'm going to start here. Aunt Ray is folding laundry. I should place that. And here. Aunt Ray swayed back and forth with the movement of the iron. Gertie folded the shirt in half again, and then again. She sighed one more time. Aunt Ray kept ironing. Don't you hear me sighing? Aunt Ray looked surprised. I thought you were just breathing extra loud today. Did something happen at school? Gertie gave up folding the shirt in halves and rolled it in a tidy log. We did the summer speeches. What'd they think of your frog? Aunt Ray asked. Bet they never saw a resurrected frog before, huh? Someone else did better, Gertie said. How'd they do better? Aunt Ray yanked the iron cord out of the wall. It was just more impressive, Gertie said. I've got to be the most impressive person in my class. I already think you're very impressive. Aunt Ray took the shirt out of Gertie's hands, refolded it, and stacked all the laundry in a basket. Gertie tried to let Aunt Ray's words make her feel better, but it wasn't enough for Aunt Ray to think she was impressive. She needed to prove it to Rachel Collins, too. what can I do to be a better person? You could play with Audrey. She's got a bad case of the mopes lately. Gertie groaned. Aunt Ray, I can't play with Audrey. She needs to play with her own kind. She had explained over and over to Aunt Ray that the only thing 5-year-olds and 10-year-olds had in common was that they both had eyebrows. Besides, I need to be more like... Gertie threw her arms out and wiggled her fingers, trying to make Aunt Ray understand. Aunt Ray stared at her. I need to be better than Mary Sue Spivey, Gertie blurted. What's a Mary Sue Spivey? come on. Okay, I'm just going to, Kate, let me just read you your entire book. Can I just read you your entire? Because we got a no good seat stealing new girl we got to talk about. Okay, so I'm going to throw this compliment to you because I need to, because you need to hear it and you're going to hear it from all of us, but I think it's going to be important every time you hear it. So let me say it to you. Your book reads aloud so well, Kate. You have a gift of writing stories that read aloud really well, and that's not a gift that everybody has. And so I think that you're going to have lots of readers of Gertie's Leap to Greatness, but I think more importantly, you're going to have a lot of readers alouders. I don't even know what that term is. But you're going to have a lot of people reading this book aloud because it sings off the page. Gertie, you need to hear Gertie's voice aloud. It's just, it's a beautiful thing. You really have a talent.
Thank you so much. Oh my goodness.
So I need to know. Not I need to know how do you do this. I don't need to know how do you do this, but I need to know stories for you. Because people that write books that read aloud really well, they're the same kind of people that have like a really good, really built up, like aural storytelling quality. You heard books read aloud to you as a child. You just love reading aloud books. I know that there's something going on with you and Cass. I'd love to know more about you and Cassie and growing up and what it means to have two daughters that end up growing up to be two authors.
Yeah, well, we were always big readers when we were kids, and our parents are readers. They're science fiction and fantasy fans. And when I was little, the Harry Potter books came out, and Cassie read them. She had a teacher read them to her in school. She read the first one, and she became a fan, and she read these books, and she told me I had to read Harry Potter, that I would love it, and she told our mom that she had to read Harry Potter, and we didn't want to. We thought it wasn't for us, and Cassie was outraged, and so she started following us around the house reading the first Harry Potter book aloud.
She was like, not punishing you, but she was protesting you by reading aloud Harry Potter.
It was for our own good. Before long, we were fans as well, and we read the entire Harry Potter series aloud to each other. Whenever a book would come out, we would, you know, set aside a day or two and just read the whole thing aloud, all of us taking turns. And it started this wonderful tradition of us reading aloud to each other, and Cassie and I homeschooled for a while, and basically that was what we did every day, all day, was we read aloud to our mom and to each other. And yeah, we always had a designated reader, so whenever we were doing something, if somebody was cooking or cleaning the kitchen or, you know, doing any projects, we would have one person who was set aside to read the book to provide the entertainment. And yeah, I think that's really good training for your ear as a writer. So yeah, more people should do that.
I love that. And to know that we must be just about the same age then, because I likewise grew up, I didn't grow up reading Harry Potter. I missed the whole reading thing when I went into like middle grade and above. But I came back to it as an adult, and I came back to it just in time to have the final couple Harry Potter books published, and we read them aloud as well. And that was just magic to be able to read aloud. And that's something that has stayed important to my wife and I, that we read aloud to each other still all the time too. But, I don't know. I can just see it. I don't want to be so obvious or blatant about it, but I can see that two people that read aloud in a household that values stories as much as it sounds like yours did, that maybe it was only a matter of time that you would come up with your own stories and start to tell them and eventually write them down.
Maybe so. You know, if writing feels like a really good fit, I know to me and to Cassie, and it just feels like what we're supposed to do and what we're meant to do, and it's really cool to have a job like that where you know that this is what you want to be doing with your time, and this is, I guess, your passion. That sounds overly dramatic, maybe, but it's true.
I don't think it's dramatic at all. I think for any of us to be passionate about any of our work is a gift. I think it means we can bring something special to the table. And I don't think it has to be writing. Be passionate about anything at all. Be passionate about plumbing, but do it with love and find joy in it. I think that's great. So good for you that stories were there then. Well, so where did you, how did you come to start writing then? Was that something that you were doing prior and then decided maybe I'll make a career out of this, or did someone like maybe you had some like great encouragement at home that this was a something that would be worthwhile pursuing at like a collegial level?
Well, my parents have always been really supportive. They said, you know, do whatever you want, do whatever makes you happy,
Wow.
and
What a
figure out the
gift.
rest along the way. And yeah, Cassie and I both found writing. We decided that we wanted to write in college. We had a really great creative writing program at our undergrad, and before then, we had never considered writing professionally just because, you know, we don't know a lot of authors, or we didn't grow up with a community that had like a lot of authors. So
Yeah.
we didn't think of that as an option. But when we got to college, we both loved writing so much. And then right out of college, we decided to get our MFAs. We did that together at the same time.
So
And
you went to undergrad together. You get along with Cassie just a little bit, I take
she's a really good friend.
it. That's great though that you went to undergrad together and then continued to get your MFA. That was something you
Yeah.
found a value in. I know that not everyone who writes professionally has that background, but that is actually something that I value a lot too, and I've talked a lot about pursuing an MFA because I feel like that's something that I personally would value. But so you both had
Exactly.
that too. Yeah.
Well, no, you know, you never need an MFA to write. Nobody
Of
does.
course.
You don't need an undergrad degree, but I think for both of us, we wanted to improve our craft, and we wanted to do it right after undergrad, and we had this, you know, we had the time to do it right then, and it helps to really focus you to take the MFA seriously. And I don't know, it made me feel more like a writer because I was dedicating so much time to it. You know, it was making it a priority.
So,
That's what I'm trying to say.
no, I fully understand that being able to make it a priority, I think, sets you on a good course. Why
Yeah.
don't you talk a little bit about where you got your MFA? Because that's where you met my buddy Lauren.
Exactly. We went to the Vermont College of Fine Arts, and Lauren was in our class. Hello, Lauren.
Lauren Davis. I should just say Lauren Davis of
Lauren
Halfway
Davis.
Over Elephants.
Yes.
She talks about you and Cassie all the time. And let me tell you, I think it was part of her excitement, knowing that Gertie was coming, that also just made all of us so excited because she right away was just vouching for, I mean, where Kate's this like amazing person. Wait till you read her work.
Oh,
I guess,
thank you, Lauren.
did you,
Thank you for being my cheerleader over there.
but you, I take it from that where I was going to lead is that you had a chance then to read one another's work while you were in this program as well.
Me and Cassie, or
You
me and Lauren?
and the colleagues, you and the classmates, you and the
Oh yes, if we did. There were always readings, and the individual classes would do readings of their work, so we got to hear each other's stories and voices.
Oh
So,
yeah.
yes.
That's cool. Well, and I mean, of course I've taken you've heard Cassie's writing once or twice. Have you had a chance to read Circus Mirandus yet?
I really enjoyed it.
I'm glad. I hope you've had a chance to tell her.
We're
Goodness.
actually each other's first readers, so
I
I
think
read every draft.
I think I've heard that. That's you must be. I'm answering my own question. It seems, but are you able to be critical and push each other? You being as close as you are, you probably have a good sturdy relationship built on trust, so that probably works out, right?
Exactly. Yes, that's what makes it work. So she can tell me when something isn't working, and you know, maybe it'll hurt my feelings, but I'll get over it because she's my sister.
So did it help that, I don't know if it would help, I don't even know why I'm asking that, but did the fact that she went sort of a year ahead of you, but that doesn't mean the book sold at the same time or a year ahead, it doesn't have to mean the schedule was the exact same, but was it at all helpful that she sort of went through some steps ahead of time? Like, did it help with preparing for promoting this book and doing whatever sort of like blog tours and school visits and all that stuff to support it? Did it help to see that she went through it first?
I definitely think so. I'm always teasing her about it. Like, thank you for paving the way. And
as a librarian, we would have been like, whenever other librarians go through stuff, we're always like, can you send me your files?
Exactly. Well, it's hard to be a debut and because everything is new, you know, when you're writing your first book, all you know is writing, and
yeah,
or at
no
least
doubt.
That's all we knew was writing. And so you're suddenly thrown into this publishing world that's a lot bigger and more complicated than I had imagined, and warmer too, and wonderful. Like, it's just really great, but it's also intimidating when you're new. But yeah, like you said, I got to see Cassie do everything, and I actually went on some school visits with her.
Oh, cool.
I was like her personal assistant. It was wonderful. So yeah, I've seen a school library before, and so it is less scary, I think, for me than it would have been.
Are you kidding? This is like, it's the most welcoming, loving place on earth, I think, school libraries.
It really is. It really is. And oh my gosh, bookstores and booksellers. And it's awesome to meet all of these people. And you're right, it's a warm environment.
Yeah. The time that you've spent leading up to this release, how have you managed? There's got to be time that's like waiting time. There's got to be time when you finish a draft and you send it off to an editor, and to edit a 240-page book has got to take a little bit of time. So
my editor's pretty fast.
It does go fast. But you've been, I assume, writing another book, maybe even like, maybe you've got like different drafts of different things going on, right?
Right. So there is a lot of waiting. You know, you send stuff off and you have to wait, and then you finally sell the book and you have to wait a long time for it to come out. But yeah, you keep busy, and yeah, you're always busy writing new stuff and writing stories and coming up with new ideas. And there's always more revision to do.
Yeah.
Which is, revision's a full-time job. So you keep busy.
So Kate, maybe where my brain was going then with it was it easy for you to learn to keep busy? Was that like a strategy you picked up quickly, or was it something you had to learn?
I think, well, there's always so much to do. I don't think I ever had to learn it. It's just there's always more to do. And like, I think I see that and I want it to be better. And oh my gosh, I feel like my to-do list never ends, you know?
That's great. No, I think that's great. I think that there's time when, I mean, I think you can make yourself busy. I think that that's a good strategy to do, to be always working on the next thing. Cause if you're waiting to hear back from someone, then you can drive yourself crazy and become like a Facebook troll or something. But, but finding a way to allow your brain to keep working on writing and keep thinking about stories, I think that it's not a skill that everyone adapts naturally. I think that it's something that some people do have to struggle with and learn in order to build those better habits.
I can't imagine not having a story in the works.
That's awesome.
Like it's just what you do, you know?
Okay, how many do you have in the works right now?
Well, I don't have a many finished drafts or anything, but there, I mean, there's always like, there's something going on in the background.
do you have whatever your next work is? Do you have like, how far along are you on whatever is your next thing?
It's still at the super secret private stage.
Cool, but you've written it.
I haven't written the whole thing.
Okay, cool. You have something.
I've written. Okay.
I like it. Okay.
I have something.
Super secret. I'm going to bet that there are words and that they flow with this, and they read aloud with this like beautiful Southern flow that will just make me want to grab it and be like, Kate, I'm going to read your audiobook for you.
I hope so. I hope so.
That's cool. Well, good
My
for
first
you.
Reader is happy with it right now.
Your first reader.
I will
reader.
Say that. Yeah. Cassie.
Your sister? I was going to say, that's good. I love it. Oh, my word. Do you find yourself pulled to write for this audience, for like this great middle grade audience? Or do you find, I don't know, maybe are you a writer that the story will dictate who the audience is? Or do you find that the stories that come out seem to be more for the same audience?
That's a good question. I think I start writing a story and I don't have, like, I don't say, oh, I'm going to write a middle grade novel I'm going to write a YA novel. I start writing and it's a middle grade novel is how it works. And I think it's because the books that made me a reader were all middle grade novels. And I love the books in that age group because it's such a wonderful age to write for, because the middle grade audience, the characters are having so many firsts, so many new experiences, like the first time they got mad at a friend, you know, or the first time they realized that their parents were human, or, you know, instead of like these super people who can't make mistakes. And everything's really, really fresh at that age. And but also exciting because they're old enough to have some more freedom.
Yes.
So I don't know. I think it's a really rich time. And it's wonderful to read about and to write about. And so I think that's why I'm drawn to it.
I love that. I want to bring things. There's a nice way to bring things back around here to the beginning and to wrap up our conversation. And that is that when I was reading Gertie's Leap to Greatness, there's a character in there that we didn't talk about today. And I know there's a lot we didn't talk about for the readers to discover here. But a character that I want to call out that I want people to really pay attention to is the narrator of this story. Because I feel like when you wrote this narrator, you put yourself smack dab in the middle of that story. And we've got this narrator that feels like a classmate of Gertie's that's just telling us, kind of like when you're in class and you're like leaning over the over your shoulder to tell you the person sitting behind you what's going on. The narrator reads like Gertie's classmate. And I think that voice that I keep coming back to is probably one of the things that makes Gertie work so well. That voice just so almost effortlessly, nails the tone that is needed to be able to experience this story. I just think for me, that was really what hooked me. And then when I stepped back and realized that, oh, this is a character here themselves that I think I really am loving too. That was something that was great for me.
Well, when I'm thinking about tense and point of view, when I was an undergrad, someone described the close third person tense as being the guardian angel tense. So the narrator is actually the main character's guardian angel, you know, sitting on their shoulder and following them around, caring and loving of their story. And that's how I like to think of it when I'm sitting down to write. So it's the guardian angel tense.
The guardian angel tense. I've never heard that before and I love it.
I love it. I didn't come up with it, so I can't take credit, but I love it.
Yeah, but you know what, Kate? It works for you. Keep it. Oh, it's wonderful. Kate, I can't wait for readers, for my readers, for everyone's readers, to find this book and to hear Gertie and to meet Gertie and to read that narrator's voice and to know that it's them in Gertie's world experiencing this story alongside her. Thank you so much for writing this story and for taking time out of your night to come talk to me.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. Before I go, I do want to give you a chance to say one last word to all your readers. I'm going to see a library full of children tomorrow morning, and you know, many, many of us are going to see these kids. And so I want to know, Kate, what message would you like for me to bring to them from you?
I would like for you to tell them that I said hello, first of all, and also that reading is super cool and books smell good, and sometimes I know reading is hard too, and you find a book it seems boring to you, but I think everyone should know that there is a book for them. And it might not look like a normal book. It might look like a graphic novel or a comic book or even a magazine, but there are words and stories for absolutely everybody. And when you find the one that just fits you and makes you feel like you've been seen, it's a really wonderful feeling. And you're gonna love it.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if the episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook and Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Neil Porter joins me on the podcast to talk about, well, being Neil Porter. He's a renowned publisher with a distinct taste, and he gave me free range with questions. You won't want to miss this one. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's Koko Sleep, and I'll see you there.